Great. We'll reconvene then now. This is agenda item four. Ron, this is yours to convene. Thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to hearing about fire system readiness and get an update on where things stand. Thanks.
All right. Very good. Can you all hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. And you should be seeing a title slide for the presentation as well. All right, very good. Well, thank you, Chair Imeson, members of the board, and State Forester Daugherty for the record. My name is Ron Graham, and I serve as the Deputy Chief of Fire Protection for ODF. Joining me today in the presentation will be Brett Weidemiller from the Coos Forest Protective Association. Brett has been doing some COVID-19 safety officer work for the Protection Division. Brett is also a safety officer on our IMT-3. And as I said, he'll be giving you an update a little bit more on some of our ongoing COVID-19 preparedness and planning measures. So before I get started into this presentation, about a week ago when Chief Doug Graff and I were briefing on what we would be updating you all on, I thought it was going to be pretty boring. And as I'm sure some of you are well aware, that is no longer the case. In just a week's short time, our fire activity has picked up significantly across the state and the region, and we're currently being challenged with, you know, our first lightning event coupled with warm, dry weather and peak fire conditions. And I would just give you a quote from Dennis Lee, our district forester over in the Klamath Lake District, where they're currently dealing with a large fire on the landscape. He said, right now, the fuels, weather, the conditions are just as dry and as explosive as he's ever seen. So that should give you a little bit of an idea of what our folks in the field are currently dealing with. Pretty dynamic situation. Okay, so I wanna move into the presentation for you and give you a little bit of an update on where we are with the drought. It's kind of been a little bit back and forth this season so far, but as you can see, we are still in some considerable drought through much of the state. 15% of the state is in abnormally dry, 25% of the state is in moderate drought, and 42% is in severe drought, with around 8% in extreme drought. And it seems like every day another county is declaring a drought in their respective counties. So this map depicts exactly that, the counties that are currently in drought. As of yesterday, 13 counties had declared drought across the state. And as I said, you know, yesterday, two additional counties joined in and declared. So it seems like kind of daily, weekly, we see those conditions increasing across the state as well. Looking out towards August at the temperature outlook, the only good thing here is that much of the state, almost all of the state, is really looking to be in what the predictive services says is an equal chance of normal temperatures. So no strong indicators that the temperatures will be either extremely above normal or below normal. All trends are pointing towards normal temperatures for August. As we look out through August, September, and October, that does change a little bit. There's stronger signals and indications that we will have a better than normal chance of seeing above normal temperatures throughout much of the state, and stronger across that southern tier of the state is where it even intensifies a little bit to a little bit higher chance of those above normal temperatures. Precipitation side, really showing just equal chances of normal, so no strong indicators of any above or below normal. And the caveat there is, you know, when you look at August, it's typically one of our lowest, if not our lowest, months of precipitation across the state. We usually categorize it as minimal to no measurable precipitation. The only exception would be is if we do get wet storms that come through, but historically it's a very dry month for us. And as we look across August, September, and October, that same trend continues of just equal chance. And oftentimes we start to see a little bit better chances of some measurable precipitation September into October. No strong indicator as of yet that there's a great greater than above normal chance to see some moisture later on. So that'll show up as we look at what that translates into fire danger for us as we look at that next. So looking at that, you can see up in the upper corner, you know, July where we stand now, much of the eastern part of the state is in that above a normal significant wildland fire potential. As we go through August, that strengthens to all but the far northwest corner of the state. And then September, we start to see a little bit of reprieve from that as well. The next outlook of this will come out in August 1st, and it'll project, you know, August, September, and October. Hopefully, by the time we see that outlook and we look at the month of October, it's all white, and I really hope we're out of fire season at that point. But yet to be seen. As I said, we're kind of in a challenging period right now, starting with lightning yesterday, and I'll show you some graphics later on. We expect mostly east of the crest, a lot of lightning again today, and still lingering tomorrow, and looking at maybe Friday starting to trend out of the lightning. And we're in this little bit of a pattern of, we kind of get back into normal seasonal temps in the 80s, upper 80s, and then we see a few days spike into the 90s, mid 90s, and of course triple digits in the southern part of the state and other areas, and some windy conditions with this weather pattern through the gorge as well. So this is what I spoke to. You know, things have changed over the course of the week. Is, you know, we're seeing that a little bit of an extended drying period now, despite June having been pretty good to us for rainfall. We've been in a very dry pattern. We've started to see the increasing temperatures and winds. So when you think about dry, hot, windy, and throw in some lightning like we saw yesterday with very little precipitation, that's when we start getting challenged by fires. And add on to that still human-caused fire activity on top of that. And we saw that in parts of the state yesterday as well. So kind of moving on to where we sit this year, year to date, and this was dated as of yesterday, and we've had, as I mentioned, some significant increase in fire activity. As of yesterday, we are tracking very close to our 10-year average on the number of fires, with 345 fires reported on ODF protection for 666 acres, compared to the 10-year average of 373 fires and over 9,800 acres burned. Most of our activity this year, prior to yesterday, really has been human-caused activity with, you know, very few lightning fires and not a significant amount of acreage attributed to lightning fires at all. When you look at totals for the state across all jurisdiction, adding our federal partners, right now, as of yesterday, we are sitting at about 667 fires across the state for about 5,400 acres collectively burned prior to the most recent fire activity. Talking about fire cost, you know, we're off to a little bit of a slow start this year. And, you know, as you can see, you know, what the average has become, I highlighted that in the last board presentation as well. And right now, you know, with large fire costs as of yesterday, you know, we were pushing $1 million in large fire costs on the gross fire costs. When you take in account those recoveries, and they've been recoveries only from fires on other federal agencies' lands, other jurisdictions, we have not had any FEMA fires yet, as you've heard mentioned in the previous finance discussion in State Forester Daugherty's opening comments. So when you get those recoveries in, we're at about $650,000 and growing in net fire cost right now. You heard Bill Herber mention, you know, the significant gains in fire cost recoveries, including the Garner Fire FEMA cost recovery. And I just want to really recognize Bill Herber, James Short, and the Administrative Services Division staff, and Stacy Miller, our Protection Finance Manager, for all the tremendous work they've done. I think when you look back at where we were a year ago with outstanding receivables to collect on, and where we are today and the continued progress we're making and the just, you know, the process improvements that we've made on our own collectively as a team really shows that coordinated effort and that commitment to, you know, continuous improvement to do things better. So I couldn't, you know, pass this moment up to recognize those staff members and those leadership folks that have been involved in that effort. In previous discussions and presentations, we talked a lot about COVID readiness, and we've, you know, highlighted our plans and preparedness efforts around COVID readiness. A couple things I'd like to add before I turn it over to Brett for an update on what he's been engaged in and leading. An additional thing as far as training, recently last week, we assisted with the Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training and the National Guard getting 450 soldiers trained up in wildland firefighting at the ready to serve as 20-person Type 2 crews for us. This is a great effort across multiple agencies, as I mentioned, and having that additional resource at our ready is a great addition to our complete and coordinated system every year. So I want to make sure that I did highlight that and shout out to them. And this is where I'm going to turn it over to Brett briefly, and Brett will go a little bit more in depth in the COVID-19 preparedness efforts we've made.
Hey, good morning, everybody. So again, my name is Brett Weidmiller. I'm an assistant unit forester for Coos Forest Protective Association. And then also I am the safety officer for ODF Team 3. So for Chair Imerson, the board, and State Forester Doherty, what I was hoping to do is take a couple moments to discuss what we're doing for COVID preparedness in terms of the subcommittee. And what that subcommittee, as you can see from your screen, was dealing with really was grabbing the multitude of operational plans and guidelines that were out there written from folks like ODF, Pacific Northwest Coordination Group, Oregon Health Authority, and others, and kind of looking at those plans and trying to figure out how to operationalize them for something more towards boots on the ground in fire camp. So we grabbed a subcommittee, and that subcommittee had quite a few folks that had varying expertise, ranging from medical, ranging from logistics. We had Oregon State Fire Marshal on there. We had representation from the Oregon Health Authority, folks from communications, folks from supply. We got together and really looked at these plans and tried to figure out how can we make something that can really work on the ground. After numerous conversations and meetings, we came together with a good plan, which is the prevention and response guidelines for large fires. So what this response guideline is doing is looking towards the protocols for prevention, coordination, and response efforts specific to camp and how that would look. As we were completing this plan, it was obvious to us that we wanted to or needed to add a little bit more depth to what the teams were coming with. So with that, we came up with the concept of the COVID-19 response module. And what this is a three-person team that most of them are coming from through OSFM and folks that their day-to-day life is dealing with COVID in the field. With that expertise bringing to the camp, their responsibilities are a few things. One is with the health liaison, which would be the team leader of that three-person team, is to coordinate with the team, coordinate with local public health, and make sure that we have a good amount of coordination and communication amongst everybody involved. In addition to that, the team's responsibility is to kind of look over the camp itself and assist us in making sure that we've closed all the loops and made sure that it's as safe as an environment related to COVID as we can. They'll be assisting with things such as the health screening, the daily health screening, tracing and tracking if we happen to have somebody that is presumptive, COVID presumptive. And then how we're going to isolate and try to remove that concern from the environment. In addition to the three-person team, you also have the COVID-19 responder. So those are paramedics that, again, are dealing with COVID on the streets through their day-to-day job every day. And their responsibility is to deal with the patients' illnesses that are specific to COVID. not the other illnesses and injuries that would be present in a fire environment. So as we are continuing through and looking where we can add some capacity to these groups, and again, keeping in mind that the rest of us are still trying to fight fire and still dealing with the normal illnesses, injuries that have been present in fires forever, we felt that there was a need to add some capacity prior to an incident and then throughout an incident in terms of communications with ODF and public health. So with that, we have added the COVID-19 coordinators. And the COVID-19 coordinator, they come to us. There's two of us, two of them, and then myself as an assistant to that group. They're dispatched regionally to assist, and they're tying in with the districts, ODF district levels and state levels, and public health to make sure that we know how everybody's sitting, what their capacities are, where we maybe need to add some strengths or not. And trying to, again, make it so we are ready for situations instead of being reactive in case something happens. So looking back on the committee's work, I think that we've accomplished our objectives. We came together and we established a boots on the ground operational plan that can be used in fire camps. We looked at where we had maybe some holes and added that capacity through the COVID-19 modules and the personnel that are associated with it. And then looking towards trying to be proactive and making sure that our counties and our areas and districts are as planned as they can be prior to an incident happening. I think we're accomplishing that with those COVID-19 coordinators and what their job duties are going to be. So the subcommittee has canceled their meetings after accomplishing their objectives. And I think that we have a solid product that is going to work for us in the future and make our environments as safe as they can be with the COVID-19 concerns. That's the end of my report.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brett. Clearly, Chair Imeson, members of the board, State Forester Daugherty, you can see Brett's level of expertise and passion for this safety of our teams and our personnel and the public is why we have him on board. And clearly, oftentimes, this is our approach. We don't have the capacity within the protection division always or the expertise to deal with some of these issues. So we bring folks in. And again, we thank Brett for his commitment. And we also thank Coos Forest Protective Association manager Mike Robeson for allowing us to borrow his staff person. We know that's a big commitment, and Brett's juggling a lot. So once again, thank you, Brett.
I just
all right, moving on.
Really helpful report. And I guess the only question I have is Brett, do you feel that given the circumstances that we're appropriately resourced for, to implement what you've outlined?
I believe so. Yeah. One of the other things that we've utilized throughout this process is other after action reviews or lessons learned. We also did some ground truthing from a fire that was currently working in Utah. And the things that were brought back, a lot of them were looking at go ahead and creating this module, this COVID module, have these folks that are have a level of expertise to tie in the gaps of communication between the county and the firefighters. I think where we're sitting ahead of the game is a lot of those other fires did it while they were on the incident. And a lot of times they utilize folks within the CMG to accomplish that. But at the same time, those folks are still trying to fight fire. So I think we're ahead of the game by having this pre-planned and these folks in the hopper, these modules, they're already in the hopper, they're already staffed, and when the team gets tapped, they're going that direction. So I think that we are ahead of the game there. I think that with the COVID-19 coordinators, they're going to give us the capacity to continue to learn, right? Because every day we're learning more and more about this, and that's what those folks are going to be able to bring to the table. And being that one voice that's going to allow us to disseminate that information quickly and efficiently through the areas.
Right. Well, thank you again for your leadership in this area and for participating with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the time.
Okay, I'll continue on and get to talk about some more exciting things. I've briefed the board previously on some of the ongoing strategic investments, the projects that were made available through landowner dollars in the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and an update on our Partenavia aircraft, observer aircraft, and the night vision and forward-looking infrared mapping system. Despite some of the COVID-19 delays that I spoke to last board meeting, our system is up and running. Our pilots have all been certified with the night vision technology. Yesterday, the crew was over in the John Day area working with some final evaluation of nighttime single engine air tanker firefighting operations. And while doing those proficiency checks and evaluations, utilizing the night vision and the forward-looking infrared, we detected a previously unreported fire on the Burns BLM district. I've heard is as significant as up to 50-acre fire. So the system's up and running and it's working. It's already showing that it'll pay off and it'll give us that extra edge in detecting and spotting fires. Sometimes, you know, again, that camera systems don't pick up, the public doesn't pick up or anything like that. So with our severity program and some of the increased activity we've seen, we've been very proactive moving some of these resources around. As I mentioned, we knew the lightning was coming. We moved our John Day-based Helitac crew down to the Klamath Lake area. We've sent a strike team of engines down there as well. And we've pre-positioned our Grants Pass hand crew. That's part of the severity program as well, should they get more lightning fires starting over the next couple of days. So exactly what this program has been built for is to be nimble, flexible, to increase our base capabilities when the district resources that we have, you know, can't keep up with the current fire activity. This is our first fire briefing map produced of the year, and just a couple fires to highlight. I'll start with the Roslyn Road. That was a Forest Service fire near Chiloquin area, 393 acres. And it was a fairly significant fire on the landscape, one of the earlier ones here in the state. Again, it was Forest Service ground. One of the success stories coming out of that is, you know, there's some fuel treatments in that area. And, you know, we really got to see firsthand the fire activity decreased when it hit those acres where those fuels were treated. So a good example of that. And of course, recently, the Spence fire down in the Klamath district as well was about 80 acres. That was on July 15th. And then the Memorial fire down near Ashland was on July 19th, and that was 61 acres. These are all good stops. These are all fires that were kept at the type 3 or below level, did not require an incident management team. There were a few structures threatened here and there on these fires, but none of them qualified for FEMA. And then also, you know, we had some activity up in DFPA as early as April, and I'll show you some other activity in April as well. That kind of kicked off the busy part of April and May before we got some of that precipitation relief that we got in June. You can see other small fires that are noted on the map as well. And as we go, you know, typically, as you've seen in the past in our busy years, this map quickly becomes cluttered with fires and a lot of information. And that's not a good thing. So looking ahead, you know, I just wanted to show you what some of this fire activity looks like. This is the Shangri-La Lane fire, and this was the fire that was shown on the cover presentation slide as well. This was down in the Grants Pass area, only 20 acres or so, but this was April, and you can see the brush conditions, just the fuel loading that folks are working with. And you can imagine, you know, what it's like working in those conditions with fuel loads like that. Next one to highlight, this is the Days Creek fire down in DFPA, and you can see the challenging ground there. There's felon buck timber involved. There's, you know, standing timber. There's a lot of steep topography. You can see the fire behavior was pretty extreme. That fire got to 35 acres. Again, just another fantastic spot stop on a fire, using a lot of air resources to really buy the ground resources some time to get in there and work a little bit more safely. So, again, between our district resources and our severity program, when these come out at us in the ones and twos, we have significant ability to respond to these and keep these as relatively small fires on the landscape. It's when we start seeing multiple and lightning events where we see hundreds of fire starts that we're extremely challenged and we don't have the resources. This fire is the Spence fire that I highlighted on the map in the Klamath area. This one did get to almost 80 acres and it made some pretty significant runs. Again, heavy use of aviation resources, a lot of good cooperation with our federal partners over there as well. All of these fires are under investigation at this time. And again, there's been a lot of human caused activity year to date kind of leading up to some of this. And also I mentioned the Memorial Road fire down in Southwest Oregon District, 60 acres as well. We actually brought our large air tanker on a day early prior to the contract starting and flew it on this fire. So great that that resource was available for us and we could bring it on early. That's a real added plus for us. And then, of course, yesterday, this is the first look we had of the Ben Young fire. It's between Paisley and Lakeview. This fire is under investigation. The point of origin of this fire is very close to the border of our protection in U.S. Forest Service. And currently we're working with the U.S. Forest Service as a team. A Type 2 team has been ordered for that fire. It's estimated to be over 1,000 acres now. It's mostly burning now on U.S. Forest Service land. Most of the ODF protected acres were grass and brush and a little bit of sparse timber. And most of that has been fire lined is what, now and is under control, but it's burning predominantly on U.S. Forest Service, such the decision to order a Pacific Northwest interagency incident management team. And as I was starting to mention, the division, the protection division, and the Klamath Lake District is working with our federal partners, looking at, the possibility as the U.S. Forest Service assuming the lead financial agency on this fire, being that most of the activity is currently on them. And that's just seems like the appropriate thing to do. There's an interagency team and a lot of interagency resources coming to that. Again, that's a very early look of that fire. What I want to move to next is just a quick update. This is outside of the Strategic Investments Program. This is a joint project we've been working on for some time with the Office of State Fire Marshals and the fire service across the state. We've been using a technology that's been developed by a company called Intera, and it's a situation analyst product. We've been using this in the past from the Keno Fire Department in Klamath County. They piloted this project and started it in that area. And as interest grew and demand for use grew, Klamath County asked the state to become a partner in this and really take the lead and make this a statewide product. And a lot of hard work and leadership from Chief Ketchum in Keno Fire Department in Klamath County, Dennis Lee, our district forester in Klamath, as I mentioned, and then Teresa Alcock, our fire program analyst, is our project lead on this. And we've worked across the fire service, as I mentioned, with OSFM, and we now have this product in place. You'll recall at times when we've had a lot of fire activity, we've used this tool in giving you kind of a live briefing. And that was based out of that system that Keno hosted. And now we do have this available statewide. So all of the fire service can request access to this, whether it's wildland responders from ODF, structural rural fire departments, our OSFM partners, and even our landowner partners. So industry partners and landowners can have access to this system, as well as our federal partners as well. So this really gives us the ability to share real-time information, see where responders are, see where fires are on the landscape, pull in a host of information. You can see in the lower part of your screen that project through the strategic investments with our forward-looking infrared. When that is up and running and mapping a fire, you'll be able to see that download and that link right in this system. So it's really neat. What I'm going to do now is I'm just going to stop this presentation for a moment. I'll show you, as we always do, the closing slide, of course, but I'm going to show you the State of Oregon Fire Situation Analyst Live, SOFSA, as we call it. So bear with me for just a minute and I will switch my screen here. Okay, hopefully you're seeing a real busy map right now. and a lot of information. I'm going to zoom into Oregon a bit and show you just a couple of things. I could spend an hour giving you a demo on this, and I will not take up that much of your time. But one of the things you can see on there, and as I move out, you can see lightning activity. And lightning activity is color-coded by the age of it, basically. So as you look, as you see black lightning strikes, those are older ones. The more darker, prominent colors become more recent lightning. And as we progress through today, we'll start seeing actual lightning as it's being, as it's coming across, you know, the countryside. So I just wanted to show you kind of what this system does for us. And you see these fire symbols here. And as I zoom into them, this is the Ben Young fire that I mentioned outside of Klamath right now. You can kind of see where that fire is burning. You can see responders, resources, heat spots, etc. Once we get the incident mapping, you'll see a fire line and a perimeter and a lot of other information in here. If structural fire departments have done assessments on structures, that information is populated in this as well. And I'll give you an example of what it looks like when you actually see kind of a completed fire with fire lines and perimeters. So back to the Spence Fire, Klamath District as well. This gives you an idea of what you can really see. The division breaks, water sources, hot spots, resources still on the fire, all of that information for incoming staging area, incoming resources, all have this information as it's being put into this system real time. The responders on the ground can put this information from their phone, multiple media devices, tablets, you name it. So it's a really significant tool. This is just the tip of the iceberg as we expand this technology and add to it. The other thing I wanted to show you is just a little bit of what else it does. It doesn't just stop at the Oregon border. As you can see, it's all GIS based, and you can see Northern California. And you can see some of the activity down by Susanville and that in Northern California. Those conditions down there are not much different than what we're seeing in Southern Oregon, Klamath, Southwest Oregon. So just a little bit of a preview of what's to come possibly our way is that fire activity is picking up to the extent that we've seen our interagency firefighting crews, the private firefighting contract crews mobilizing to those incidents now as well. So we look at resource draw when we start seeing this kind of activity across the map. Our federal partners and their interagency resources, a lot of them are committed out of state, out of our area right now. And that's why we rely on our base fire system in the complete and coordinated system and the severity program that keeps those resources dedicated here in the state to respond to our fires. And that's a key point we make to our federal partners. We fully recognize that they bring a lot of resources through their national system to bear at times. But those resources are controlled nationally and they're sent to the highest priorities nationally. Our resources stay here. They protect the home front. We prioritize them within the state. And that's what makes us highly successful. So with that, I believe I've probably used up all my time and I would end my presentation and be open for any questions.
Any questions or comments from board members?
Yeah, Tom, I have a comment, a question. This is Joe. Ron, thanks for that. I really appreciate that update. That's great. And I really do appreciate the review of the severity resources and how we're using it. I think it's important to remember this is really the Wildfire Protection Act at work right now. I mean, this is what we put that, the state put that in place several years ago, and we're seeing that work. And I really also appreciate that review of that forward-looking infrared. I think, you know, those landowner dollars really, you know, going back to the associations and what's important to them and our partnerships and trying to, you know, figure out what is really important, what's really going to be effective tools. And I think that's really, I think it's worth repeating how it makes Oregon so unique in these relationships we have with landowners and the state. And I really appreciate that update on that. I guess I just have two questions. One is related to resources across the West. Just kind of regionally, firefighting resources, what's happening across the West. And then my second question has to do with our federal partners and their tactics. Are they, you feel with the COVID issue, are they, how, has that impacted their tactics at all? Are they being more aggressive, less aggressive? I'm just curious of your feedback on that. That's my question. questions.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Those are excellent questions. So first I'll address, you know, resource availability across the West. I gave you a little preview that, you know, basically what I'm speaking to is, you know, those federal interagency hotshot crews, those type one crews that are stationed and sponsored in Oregon and Washington. And, you know, about half of those have been on fires in Utah, Colorado, and the Southwest and stuff. And there's been a lot of discussion within the interagency group, the coordinating group, that Chief Doug Graff participates on, saying, okay, we need to get those resources back. All right, let's not extend them on any assignments. Given our situation, it's probably a discussion to start getting those resources back, holding them here for our fires, because in the COVID-19 situation, it doesn't make sense to import a lot of people in light of exporting ours out. Let's keep our resources here, use them, you know, that just makes sense. Overall, the status right now on resource availability is pretty good, right? We haven't had a lot of problems and a lot of competition for resources. Washington's had a couple large fires that they've ordered a team on, and those are winding down. So far, so good. California saw some issues with COVID within their adults in custody program, and they utilize a lot of adults in custody for firefighting crews, far greater than the extent we do here in the state. For a while, California was, you know, potentially looking at some help for crew availability, but I haven't heard anything more on that. So perhaps that situation is moderated. So Joe, so far, so good. My always concern though is, as we start seeing those large fires in California, that can suck up a lot of resources. And, you know, just keeping a close eye on where those national resources are in terms of our availability to call on them as well. But our partnerships in the state, as you heard me say, with the National Guard are in place and remain strong, and all of our Fire Compact partners from the Northwest Compact and our other states. So right now I'm feeling good on resource availability. As far as our federal partners' tactics, you know, I can just share with you my opinion and what I've seen so far. I've seen pretty aggressive firefighting so far, and that's good. The testimony to that is, you know, we've only had this one fire, the Ben Young fire, go to the type two level right now so far. So, you know, it appears that things are working. We've been seeing really good communication. I'm not hearing things of any strategies to, you know, manage fires for other than full suppression. So we're early into the season, you know, so to be determined how that will continue to play out. But at least my impression so far is there's been a pretty good commitment to full suppression.
Ron, didn't the Forest Service add additional aviation resources and we got some of those stationed in Oregon?
Yes, they did, Peter. They brought on some additional type two helicopters, type one helicopters. That does fall into that somewhat national pool, right? Just like a hotshot crew, they're hosted here. Those have been kind of in and out of the region as well. Predominantly, they've kept those around. So they did make an effort and increased those resources as well.
Thanks.
Okay, any more questions for Ron? Okay, thanks very much, Ron. Board members will now, you'll need to get off of this Zoom, and Hillary has provided everybody, I think, with the appropriate link for our executive session, which will begin at 11:30.